This is The Agenda from News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern affecting you are open for discussion. And now your host, Michael Knight.
Did he say 47 degrees? That can't be Wenatchee, can it? 12:15 at The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ. Michael Knight, so pleased to be here, actually taking off layers of clothing. This is a revelation. And I ask you today, as we get ready for our program, to consider this. Ever thought of cool ways not to pay your taxes? Well, before you launch into your ingenious plan, would you please just keep in mind that the kindly IRS have been playing this game a lot longer and more successfully than you have? So it's time you realize they have a federal action plan for everything you can dream up. How about this one? It's called the expatriation tax. Whew. Anyway, what is it called? I'm glad you asked. The expatriation tax, or whatever that is. Expatriation tax is for a tax on an individual who decides he's going to not pay taxes by renouncing his citizenship and just changing residence. Any individual worth $2 million in average income tax liability, or 127 who renounces his citizenship and leaves the country, is automatically assumed to have done so for tax avoidance reasons and is subject to a higher tax rate. You see, you're exiting and you thought you're going to take your money with you. They had a plan for you all along. So as you're getting on the plane for Costa Rica or Luxembourg or San Marino or the Caymans or any other laissez-faire tax haven, your money is being subtracted well ahead of your plans. And if you're a dangerously well-heeled person, maybe you can get out quickly, but not without the mucho dinero Uncle Sam's going to take, put it in his tax bag, and he beseeches you. You may go now that you've paid your way out. Also today, we're going to peek behind the blossoms at the Decision Center at the Apple Blossom Festival. New Zealand. That's all you have to know. We're going to delve into our history with New Zealand with Darcy Christofferson coming up at the bottom of the hour. But right now we say hello to our tax genius who came in with such good news. It's Tim Dilley from Cordell Nair and Company. Nice to have you here, Tim.
Hi, Michael. Nice to be here.
You've got the best news I've ever seen. Item number two on your list, extended tax season, exclamation mark.
That's the worst news I could think of, actually.
Oh, because you have to work longer, right?
Yes.
Well, how far are they extending it? Into June?
Well, they're not. It was just I thought it would be good to mention the rumor mill, which was last week, I think right after the show that Sean did last Thursday, that there were a couple of congressmen who introduced legislation saying, golly, this stuff's really hard. Maybe we should give people extra time. Which is about the worst news you could possibly tell me at middle of March. Is
not changing the rules anyway, or not helping with changes in their structure, but just the length of time.
Yeah, and so that created a little bit of buzz in our office there for a few minutes as people were like, they couldn't possibly do this, could they? Well, sure, they could by an act of Congress, they could do that. They could extend the tax season another month. However. Think about the impact that would have to our treasury and the fact that, presumably dollars would arrive so much later. I just can't comprehend, how that would in fact actually get through Congress. So
everybody sees it as an up, except the people who actually prepare your taxes and work in the tax business, they see it as a downer and a terrible error in judgment.
Yeah. I just think that would be, that would just be huge, you know. If you have an issue that is too complicated for your tax return this year, either for yourself or your preparer, you still have the extension available. And you can still make a reasonable estimate of payment with that extension and give yourself plenty of time to complete that tax return after that initial due date. So in my mind, it really doesn't do anything if you were to kick the date out, other than I'm sure a lot of people would then not pay.
Procrastinate.
And so the change in the cyclical nature of our country's revenue would shift to the right, and I just can't believe that would be reasonable, I guess, but who knows.
So that's a rumor, and by now we have to assume that there's no way they're going to pass anything.
Rumor in the form of proposed legislation, which, you know, all sorts of goofy things get proposed, right? Another piece of legislation that actually I think has made it to the tax committee of one of the congressional houses, what's called the tax extenders legislation. Now, this is a bit more of a real threat to me, which says that some certain pieces of legislation that had expired at the end of 2017, and so therefore are not in effect for 18, even under the new tax bill. They may decide to go ahead and approve them again for 18.
For 18.
Oh, God. Which, yeah, that's my reaction as well. Hey, Congress, have you noticed the date?
Do you know what day it is? Yeah.
And I believe that, you know, what is today? Today's the 13th, and I believe that that was approved in committee yesterday on the 12th, which would therefore suggest that these tax extenders, which, you know, quite frankly, don't affect most people, but some people would be impacted. The most popular piece of that tax extenders is likely the PMI deductibility as part of your itemized deductions. PMI is that that mortgage insurance that you pay for the benefit of the bank, because you don't have enough equity in your home. And we lost that. That expired at the end of 17. So we've been preparing returns for folks that if they itemize, of course, that's the first big if.
Sure.
If they itemize, they could include those PMI, those mortgage insurance premiums as part of their, as treated as part of their mortgage interest expense and therefore increase their deduction there. Well, we haven't had that all tax season long. So if they retroactively put that back, there would be probably a number of amendments, not across the board, because again, the standard deduction went up considerably this year, married filing jointly, now at $24,000 for the standard deduction. So that has to, your itemized deductions have to exceed that for it to make sense. But still, to change the rules so late in the game.
How many tax forms, tax customers would you have to refile for?
Well, who knows? You then have to look at what did they do, who does it impact, and so there would be a fair amount of analysis. And in the end, we'd have to look at, does it make sense to amend? You know, we bill for our time, of course, so, and it takes time to amend a tax return, and, you know, this was nobody's fault. It was a change in the rules, retroactive. So, you know, obviously we don't want to spend $400 amending to get $200 back, right?
I have one good piece of news for you, and that is if it just came out of committee this week, that means that means they're not doing the guy who wrote that bill any favors. They kept it there as long as they could.
Yeah, you know, and that's also how I pragmatically look at all of these things. Is,
I mean, stranger things have happened, but chances are it's not going to float.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And even the tax extenders bill, at this point, I look at it and say, you know, surely they wouldn't retroactively do that for 18, but could they reinstill it for 19? Absolutely.
Oh, sure. By then, who knows what's going to happen?
Sure. I'd appreciate that, actually, if we had that clarity for 19 now.
Does the extenders law only apply to the PMI payments on your mortgage?
No, there's a number of things. The let's see. What was one of the other popular things? Oh, an above the line deduction for tuition expense. So not one of the education tax credits, but the tuition deduction that previously used to be on page 1 of 1040, which is now on schedule 1 of form 1040, is gone. And so that was one that was sometimes handy if you've sort of exhausted your ability to do credits, and so you could get a deduction just against income as opposed to a credit, which is not as good, but something better than nothing, which is what we have right now.
So. One of my old deductions that's sort of, it's gotten less and less effective over the years, is meals and entertainment, which used to be quite a factor for me when I was a rock and roll disc jockey. now that I'm just a rock and roll talk show host, not many meals and not many deductions. How's that changed now?
So that's actually a big change for 2018, and I don't know if I've talked about this yet this year, but meals and entertainment, which we used to sort of lump together in the past, because they were generally only 50% deductible, which the IRS said, you know, you're going to eat anyway, so therefore for these business meals that you're writing off, you only get to deduct half of it. And, of course, this meal was for a business purpose, which was well documented of who you talked to, on what date, where, and about what business purpose. But they only allowed you to deduct half of that, and the same was true for the entertainment. So, Michael, you do a round of golf and a lunch, and you only got to write off half of that. Well, in the 2018 tax year, meals are still the same, but the entertainment piece is now entirely non-deductible.
Whoa.
So they took that meals and entertainment and have sort of cut out the entertainment and said you can't deduct that piece, which you know, even in our clients' kind of businesses, books and records, meals and entertainment got lumped together because they were treated the same. Right?
Now we have to unlump them.
Now you have to unlump them. There needs to be a meals account and an entertainment account.
Whoa.
Because the entertainment piece is non-deductible. And certainly you don't want to shortchange yourself on the meals component of that because it's still 50% deductible. But those rounds of golf, those sports tickets, even if it is for a business purpose, those things are no longer deductible. Good thing to keep in mind is if you do go to the Mariner game and for some reason, you know, let's say, Michael, you're renting out a suite at the Mariner game, and so they may be presenting you with a bill for not only the ticket price, the suite price, but also the meals that were provided in that suite. You'll just want to make sure that on that bill, they cut out, they itemize out the meals component versus the ticket component because the meals part will still be deductible. It's the admission price.
It's funny that they cut meals in half because you're going to eat anyway.
Well,
but now that you're going to have a good time, that we can't allow. You can't deduct a good time.
Right. Yep. And so the, you know, rounds of golf and sports tickets are probably the prominent thing that that come to mind.
Well, if I made my case, we went to a Giants game. We didn't have a good time.
Doesn't matter. Still, we're entertained.
That's hilarious.
I don't think the victory or loss determines anything about the deductibility of that.
Is it a fact, and I think it is, that if you have two domiciles, you have your home where the Dilley family lives, but then Tim is working in Seattle for a project that lasts 6 months, and he has an apartment there. Is the apartment deductible? Because you have to live there for business?
No. Most likely not in that scenario that you just described. And nor does it change my domicile from Wenatchee because it is a temporary location. Now my employer may be paying for some of that, and that doesn't impact my taxability at all. It is for the convenience of my employer. But certainly there are all sorts of other scenarios you can come up with that may have some different outcomes. But
what kind of scenarios? I'm very interested.
Whether I was renting an apartment or just happened to be staying in a hotel for a business expense, one of my key things would be if my employer is going to pay for that, I'd want to do that under an accountable plan. Because an accountable plan is where I am saving the receipts for that apartment or hotel while I am there for work that they are going to reimburse, and I am submitting my actual expenses, and so therefore they reimburse me dollar for dollar for the expenses that I've itemized, as opposed to the employer saying, you know, we'll give you whatever, pick a number, $600 a month,
right,
and then you figure out where you're going to stay. That is what we call a non-accountable plan. And I will lose out on that because that $600 will end up being part of my compensation. And the way that I used to be able to deduct that prior to 2018 through a Form 2106 unreimbursed employee expenses is gone because that form used to flow through to the 2% miscellaneous itemized deductions on my itemized deductions. That section of itemized deductions is gone. So it just does not exist anymore. And also, like I said, at the top of the show, my itemized deductions have to be greater than $24,000 anyway to use those expenses. So kind of a lose it here or lose it there, just a bad situation overall. So an accountable plan is the way that you want to have those employer arrangements now.
Rats, he said dismissively. Well, anyway, I received some bad information about that. I did hear from, in fact, it was when I got audited, the guy said, well, if you have two addresses and the second one's for business only, it's deductible, but that was not 2018. You disagree?
Yeah.
Okay, I go with the boss. I go with Tim Dilley. And here's why. Because he hasn't been wrong yet, that's why. And we're just about out of time. Is there anything we need to say about, the deadlines that are coming up? And by the way, do you recommend that people get extensions to their before they file?
We are actually feverishly doing extensions right now for our partnerships and S corporations. Friday is March 15th, and those tax returns are initially due this Friday, March 15th.
So you guys are hitting a big date.
So, yeah, in anticipation of that date and knowing that we don't have them in final form, we're pulling the trigger on those extensions. which these entities that I just described are what are called pass-through entities. They do not pay taxes themselves. They pass out the income or losses to individuals via a Schedule K-1 for that income or loss to be reported on their personal tax return, and that's where the reckoning of the tax occurs. So pulling the trigger on an extension for a partnership or an S corporation is sort of a no-brainer, as opposed to letting that lapse and be late and incurring penalties, which are not insignificant to a late filing.
Well, what does the penalty amount to? Do they look at the total dollar amount and multiply by 50?
They look at the return itself. There's a base penalty, and I want to say it's like $200 plus, depending upon the number of K-1s. And I haven't looked at it for this year, but in last year it was $50 per K-1 per month that you're late. So if you have a partnership with, you know, 10 K-1s, you're looking at, and you're 1 month late, which is 1 month or any part of a month, 1 month late, you are, you know, you're looking at a $500 penalty plus probably another $200 for the base penalty. So $700 ding just for being even.
So each penalty has two parts, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The per K-1 is where it can get expensive if you have a number of partners in that partnership or shareholders of that corporation. So those, especially those bigger partnerships that have, you know, 30 partners or something like that, that can get expensive in a hurry.
Will we be seeing you next Thursday, or will it be somebody else?
That's a great question.
I don't know the answer to that. Let's just say it's Tim. Tim Dilley, the boss of the outfit from Cordell Nair. Thanks so much for being here, Tim.
Yeah, thanks, Michael.
We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio. The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
News Radio 560, time is 12:36. I'm Michael Knight. My very special guest is Darcy Christofferson. We're going to be talking about the Apple Blossom Festival because you've made a big decision and you have a big announcement.
We do. We do. We made the decision on who our Grand Marshal is for our 100th festival.
Well, I know, so tell everybody, please.
Well, as most people know, the festival was founded 100 years ago by a woman named Susan Wagner, and she is originally from New Zealand, or was originally from New Zealand, and she wanted to start a festival like a festival that she had in New Zealand. So she started what we called Blossom Days in 1920. And as everybody knows, too, is this festival has continued on for 100 years.
It sure has.
It sure has. So we, as far as many of our committees, have always kind of been infatuated with Susan Wagner. You know, we try to think, what was she like? You know, and I always visioned her being like a 22-year-old girl, like from Little House on the Prairie, then decided to have this festival. Well, that was not the case.
No.
She was 44 years old when she started the festival.
Wow.
And she had actually met Ernst on the boat coming from New Zealand to the States. And that's where they met. And then she came to Wenatchee.
So she was coming anyway.
So she was coming anyway and just, I think, wanted to find something to do. And she did it. And we have been in contact with her family. She had two daughters, Myra and Delilah. And I've been in touch with her great-grandsons from these two women. And they are going to be our Grand Marshals. So they will be coming from New Zealand to be our Grand Marshals for the 100th Festival.
So she's the great-grandmother or the great-great-grandmother?
She's the great-grandmother.
The great-grandmother,
yes.
Good.
So these women are the boy's grandmother. So.
And strangely or coincidentally, nobody else from her family ever followed her to Washington to find out what it was all about?
No, well, actually not from Washington, but the boys have been here before.
Uh-huh.
And the whole family knows about Apple Blossom. They called her Granny Sue. And everybody in her family knew about Apple Blossom and what she did for Apple Blossom. In fact, in 1950, she came from Wenatchee back to New Zealand. Ernst had passed away. So she wanted to make one last trip to New Zealand, and it was a big deal when she left. There was a big article in the Wenatchee World, Susan Wagner's going back to New Zealand to visit her family, and then when she was in New Zealand, they did a big article in the paper there about this woman creating this amazing festival in Washington State, and then she passed away in 1953. So,
she died here in Wenatchee?
She did, yes. So it's just an amazing story that I think we all had different thoughts of how it all started. And now that I've learned more about this family and about her, it's like, you know, she was a pretty tough cookie.
Well, did her family consider her an adventurer or an explorer?
So.
Because she left home at a time when a lot of women would not travel across the face of the earth alone like that.
Her first husband with the girls passed away. And then she met another gentleman by the name of Callahan, was his last name, and they opened pubs up in the Seattle area. And then she met Ernst on the boat. So she was a little bit of an adventuress. In fact, she was the first woman in New Zealand to get a liquor license.
Wow.
So I think her parents had pubs. So this was kind of their, you know, and New Zealand was, you know, a new country back then. So it was kind of a wild country from what I
understand. Yeah, New Zealand didn't get independence until 1947.
Right, right. So anyway, it's been an interesting journey and it's been fun to learn about her. And
well, what have you learned about her that you can remember and relate to us?
Well,
what was
that.
She like on the...
Again, I had no idea that she, you know, had, you know, two, three husbands. I always thought Ernst was her husband and always her husband. And again, I pictured this little house on a prairie feel, you know, and it so was not like that. I mean, they were business people. They were, she was a go-getter. You know, the boys told me that when they talk about stories or situations, they would always say, well, if Granny Sue was around, you would not be acting that way. Or if Granny Sue was around, this would not be happening. So I just thought that was really interesting because I, again, never visualized her being that way. I visualized her just being this.
More sedate.
Yes, yes.
But she laid down the law.
You know, when you hear the words blossom days and maypoles and you just kind of picture sweetness.
Yeah.
And not that she wasn't sweet, because I'm sure she was, but I think she was very aggressive, which I guess if you're going to plan this festival, you got to be like
that. You got to twist a lot of arms.
And she continued to be a part of the festival for 30 years.
Wow.
You know, there's a radio show where she was a part of this radio show in 1947.
Wow.
So she was still working with the Chamber of Commerce planning this festival back then.
Isn't that fascinating?
It is. It really is.
She was really a civic leader in her own way.
Yes, absolutely. And for women back then, that was not the norm.
Well, how many of the Wagner family are coming to Washington?
So we have the two boys, and then which is David and Mark, and David's wife Diane will also be coming. So each boy is from each of Susan's daughters.
Right.
So. The Callahans from Seattle, they may be popping over too, on their own, but apparently the Callahan family, there's a lot of them. So that's the second man.
Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, Mr. Callahan. So, and I haven't really dug into that. I'm just more interested in the Wagner.
I would sure like to go back in time to see what.
Oh, I'd love to.
Wenatchee was like in 1930, 1950.
I'd love to. That would be so.
I just wonder what it was like. There was no bridge across the river, was there?
No, there was the walking bridge, but I don't think that was built. I don't remember when that was built, but I don't know. I'd have to go look at the museum.
Well, when the Wagners get here, they're going to be the toast of the town, right? They're going to be riding in a convertible and going to lots of events.
They will be here. In fact, we should probably try and schedule an interview with you on Tuesday, maybe. But we'll talk about that when we get off the air. But
okay. They'll
be here on Monday, and then they'll leave on Sunday. So they'll go to the All Service Club luncheon on Wednesday. Then we'll have them. Then they'll kind of hang out on Thursday. Then Friday they'll go to the ball. And then the Stemmelt Growers Grand Parade, of course, on Saturday. And then Saturday night in the beer garden is going to be a big party because all the past royalty and all the past director generals will all be in the park at that time.
Wow.
So the Wagners are looking forward to that. They're like, that's my cup of tea.
the pub.
And it's super fun listening to their accents. I've had fun. I've talked to them all on the phone, and we email daily right now. And it's been really fun getting to know them.
Are they excited about this idea?
Beyond excited. Beyond excited. And, you know, at first when we talked about it, I was like, yes, 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 we're doing this. And they were feeling bad because it costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, to fly them here, just to fly them here and back is $6,500 just for those three people. So we're super happy that Geico Insurance stepped up and they are going to pay for the airfare for them to come here.
And while we're on the subject of budgets, all of your budget is exceptionally organized, separate from the city.
Oh yes, you know that we've never been a part of the city. In fact, we have to get permits to have the parade and permits to have the arts and crafts show. Anything that we do in any of the city spots, we have to buy permits for. And then everybody that's a part of the festival has to have a business license. So there's 150 food booths and arts and crafts vendors that have to have a temporary city license in order to be in our stuff.
So, I only brought that up because there was a question about who pays for all the expenses.
Yeah, we have our very own budget. Who pays for it is basically our sponsors. If it wasn't for our sponsors, we definitely wouldn't be able to put this festival on. You know, the city does a lot for us as far as, you know, painting the apples on the street, closing the streets, hanging the banners, getting the park pretty. You know, their employees that are already doing that stuff do that for us anyway. So, but no money comes from the city.
And until you have experienced Darcy asking you for $7,000, you just don't know how quickly that money's gone.
Yes, it does go quick. And again, for the 100th, you know, when I was booking these flights, I'm like, oh, I said yes, and oh my gosh, what are we doing? So it does pop up where it's like, oh my gosh, we're spending some money. But again, we pretty much have sponsors for everything that we're doing.
It's just about one of the longest flights on the planet, isn't it?
I've never done it, but I think it would be. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But they're super excited. They cannot wait.
Have they been here recently?
David actually has been to Wenatchee before just for this reason. He did not come during Apple Blossom. It was a few years ago. But he stopped through. I think they were going to Seattle or something, and they came through. But so he's been here before. But apparently the Wagners had a lot of property or rentals that they had back then, too. So they buy houses and rent them out.
There you go.
So he sent me some pictures of some of their old homes, and it's cool.
Susan Wagner was the woman way back in the midst of time we started the Washington Apple Blossom Festival. Her children and great-grandchildren have inherited her spirit. And they're coming to be our grand marshals for the parade for the 100th Apple Blossom Festival. We'll be back to talk with Darcy Christofferson right after this.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ.
It's pizza. We make it. You bake it.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
You're listening to The Agenda. I'm Michael Knight. It's 12:50 in the afternoon on a beautiful day here in Wenatchee, where it's actually 47 degrees. I don't know when's the last time I said it was 47 degrees, but it was a while ago.
I'm so happy. I'm not wearing a coat.
It snowed yesterday.
I was going to go grab my coat, and I thought, oh, nope, I'm just going without my coat. It's wonderful.
And it'll be, that means good weather for the festival.
I hope so.
Absolutely.
It will. I think that's one thing that's going to help us this year is everybody definitely wants to get outside. So
people will want
to hang out at the park.
It was a weird winter.
It was a late winter.
Because yeah. They're still having it in Seattle.
We all said it was just such a great winter, and we all said that too much. So that's why February was so bad.
Just you wait, said yeah. Mother Nature.
Yes.
I've talked with Jack Frost, and we have plans for you.
Exactly.
Well, what plans do you have to execute now? I know you go by the calendar. You live by the festival.
We do.
I know you have things to accomplish.
Yeah. So the deadline for our arts and crafts applications are March 15th. So anybody that wants to be involved in the arts and crafts show needs to get their applications in.
Better get jumping.
Yes. And then for our parades, the deadline is March 28th. So if you're normally in our Grand Parade or Youth Parade, you need to get your application in. And everything I'm talking about is online, which is awesome to have all tickets and applications are online. And then, of course, if you're asking for any events, you can go to our app, which is sponsored by Crunch Pack. And that's a great way to keep updated on all festival events.
Now, if I happen to have a Thunderbird convertible, would I be of any use to you?
That is a great lead-in. Yes, we right before I came here, I was in a big meeting with our 100th committee. And we looks like we're going to need at least 40 convertibles for our past royalty coming home.
Ooh.
So some are providing their own and some are not. But anybody that has a convertible that holds 2 to 3 people, you can go to our website and go to applications and then download the dignitary car vehicle application. You just need to fill out an application so we can count you in. And be sure and put in the description, though, if you do have a royalty member that you would want to have ride in your car. If you graduated in 1985 and you want the royalty to be in your car from 1985, I will do my best to try and do that.
That makes sense.
But like I said, a lot of people are getting their own convertibles, but we definitely will need some. So please, please, please turn in your application. And the Grand Parade, of course, is on May 4th.
And that's going to be a day that you will spend up at Triangle Park.
Yes, yes. And it'll be so fun. You know, being a dignitary car driver is super fun because you just show up,
and
you
drive.
Park your car, you walk around, you grab a donut, you hang out with people, you get in your car, and you drive down the parade route and you go home. I mean, it's super, super fun. And this is the year that I would love to be a dignitary car driver because you don't have to worry about a float. You don't have to worry about getting there, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning and setting anything up. It's a really fun time. So
if you get there at the right time, park your car and go have a pancake breakfast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what a lot of them do.
Or
so,
eggs and bacon.
And this group of Grand Parade volunteers, this isn't their first rodeo. We had the past royalty come back 25 years ago. And even though that seems like a long time ago, we still have the exact same people helping with the Grand Parade that we did 25 years ago, pretty much. Yeah.
Well, of all the royalty coming back, did you get almost all of them? I guess some of them
are out
of town.
We were just talking about that. And we have a lot from pretty much every year starting in 1953.
Ooh.
So somebody is coming home from every year starting in 1953. So that's pretty amazing. And some of these groups, like 1963, all three girls are coming. 1966, I think, is like that, too. There's a couple in the 60s that all three are coming home. The 80s is a little tough because that was the year that we kept 10. So that's the year where it's a little chaotic. But some girls are walking. They're going to get a big 1989. That group is getting a big banner made, and they're getting matching shirts. And they're just going to walk the route. And then I think 1990 has been talking about building like a little float of some sort.
Wow.
So
okay.
I'm like, I don't care. All I want to know is I'm making a banner and I'm making signs. And do you have a vehicle?
Are any of the past royalty coming from far away, like Sheboygan, Wisconsin?
No, not really. We may be having somebody from New York coming home. And then we have two coming from Arizona. We might be having one from California. But pretty much the majority of them are the Seattle area, maybe Oregon, but
The royalty doesn't fall far from the apple tree.
No, they don't. I think the majority... Oh, actually, one is coming from Florida. I think Lisa Spargo, who was queen in 1982, she lives in Florida now, and she's coming. So I'm pretty sure she lives in Florida. So
excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, my old stomping ground. There's very little evidence of my stomping now, but I did some back in Miami. Anyway, it sounds like a great party, and really it's just a countdown now. Get out of the way. Here comes the festival.
Yeah, our next big event, of course, is the documentary premiere, and that's on April 20th.
Have you seen it yet?
I have.
The edited version?
I've seen the edited version. We watched it last week, and it definitely is 90 minutes. There's no way you could make it less than 90 minutes, but I so didn't feel like it was 90 minutes. I mean, I'm like, oh, my gosh, it's over already? So that was great, I guess. They call it a focus group. So they have a whole bunch of people that are filmmakers in this room, and they watch the documentary.
And
of course,
well,
I look at totally different things than what the filmmakers look for. I wanted to make sure that my outfit was okay or my hair wasn't messed up. I'm like, okay, I got to watch it one more time because I hate seeing myself on the camera.
That shot has got to go.
Oh, I'm just
we have time to reshoot this.
Oh, I know. So that part for me was not good, but it never will be. So I just got to get over it. But it's pretty awesome. And again, I can't thank the documentary sponsors. There's 12 of them, so I won't name them all. But for stepping up and giving us $135,000 to do this documentary is just, I mean, who says that? I mean, that's just so cool that we're doing this. So,
and how can we buy it? Is it going to be for sale soon?
You can purchase it now on our website and at appleblossom.org and just buy the DVD. It's not ready yet for you to have it,
but
you can go ahead and purchase it in advance. And then hopefully we'll be showing it during the festival at a local theater. And then after that is probably when you'll be able to buy it online, you know, as far as iTunes or whatever.
It's so. Darcy Christofferson. We got to go. But it's good to see you again, Darcy.
Good to see
and
you.
Congratulations on your choice for Grand Marshal.
Thank you.
You're listening to the...